Welcome to Wines We Drink, a podcast for wine lovers and learners. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and together with my counterpart Keith Herndon, we'll be exploring a new wine each week. Keith is a lover of wine, and I am a learner of wine, and we hope that you'll continue learning and sipping along with us. Hello again, everyone. Welcome to our podcast, Wines We Drink. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Keith Herndon, a certified wine sommelier.
Hello, Charlotte, and welcome, listeners. I'm so excited for our third season, and we're delighted to have you with us for our second episode of this third season. We're recording today at our home away from home, the Tap Wine Bar and Tasting Market here in Athens, Georgia. But I must say that I'm spiritually in the south of France.
The south of France. I will join you there spiritually because that sounds wonderful. Take me there.
All right. We're going to be drinking a wonderful rosé today from the Côte de Provence region that is aptly named Summer in a Bottle. So we're continuing the theme we started last week, selecting some wines for our summer patio parties.
Yes, last week we kicked off season three with a luxury level Prosecco. It was so delicious. So if you want to check out last week's wine selection or any of the other episodes from our previous seasons, please go wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we also always have episode guides at winesweedrink.com.
As I mentioned, we're recording today's episode at Tapped, which is fitting given that Todd and Angela Hurt, TAP's proprietors, introduced me to today's selection.
That is so cool. As we often say on the show, you know, summertime is for slowing down a bit, finding time to relax, enjoy our friends and family. And I like finding a wine that matches that kind of slow summer vibe. And more often than not, it's a rosé, I'm gonna be honest.
There's something about a chill glass of rosé that just says summer to me. When you find a really good one, the red fruit jumps out and the acidity refreshes. What's not to like about that, right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we've had some wonderful rosés in previous seasons on this show. The season one selection from the Cape Mentel Winery in Australia's Margaret River was delicious. I'm still marveling over last year's rosé from the Rayburn Winery in Sonoma's Russian River Valley. I mean, how are you going to top it?
Well, I'm not actually trying to top them. They were very, very good. But I am convinced that today we're drinking a pair of those wines.
Well, wonderful then. I'm looking forward to tasting today's selection. So can you please pour us a couple glasses?
Yeah, I'm going to take this. This is a screw top, so you can hear that come off of there. And you can... our listeners can hear that going in the glass. You can hear the crispness of it, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those who listened to last week's episode, you'll remember whenever we talked about sort of don't judge a book by its cover, don't just judge a wine bottle by its label. However, I will say that with today's selection, you absolutely can judge the wine label by the bottle. I mean, it is a stunning, it really looks like summer in a bottle based on how they did the design for the label. It's gorgeous.
That's great. So, I had you in mind, the rosé lover, right, when mm-hmm. I brought this selection to today's episode. You know, I think you're going to love this one as much as last year's. And by the way, we're opening the 2022 vintage, which is promising to be a really good year for this label.
Amazing, right? Yes.
So, we have poured you a glass there. So how would you describe the color that you're seeing?
Well, it definitely feels like a lovely example of rosé, right? When you think of rosé, this is the image that comes to your mind is what's sitting right in front of me. And I guess it would be a lovely example of French rosé, specifically.
Right. So, it's a light pink. But the winemaker describes this color as the perfect pale. You know, it's exactly the color I would expect for a rosé hailing from southern France. It's typical for how rosé is made. There was just a little skin contact with the juice. It was just enough contact to transfer that little color without imparting any significant tannins.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it's got, a lovely, almost slight orangey twinge to the color, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost...
like a sunset.
That's really a great way of describing it, right? So now that you've assessed its color, right, and we've decided that this is sunset pink...
Yes, there we go. Love it.
Please go in and smell this wine and tell our listeners what are some of the aromas you're picking up.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, right off the bat, you don't even have to sink your nose in too deep to get immediately those floral aromas. I mean, again, and I might just be looking at the flowers that are literally on the bottle. I never even described what the bottle looked like, but there's flowers, wildflowers adorning the entire bottle. And I think that that is to signal to you what's inside, right? There's immediate floral aromas. And, you know, we've established that I'm a rosé fan. So I was expecting to get those red fruit smells immediately. You know, like usually there's strawberry or raspberry. But I know that those berries are in there, but it's just I get that floral scent immediately.
Can I suggest rose petal?
Ah, I think that's spot on.
Yeah. Well, now that you've had a couple of good smells, it's time to go in for the first taste.
Okay. Mm. Oh, wow. You know, the floral smells kind of immediately give way when you actually taste it. And pretty quickly, you jump to that strawberry flavor. Juicy red fruit, and that's what I was expecting and hoping for. I'm going to go in for another sip.
Yeah, please do.
Mm. Oh, that is so good. You know, there's even some peach, maybe, notes coming through. I mean, you get that wonderful acidity necessary for a bright rosé. Immediately, like, your mouth is just filled with saliva. It feels so juicy. And that, I think, also contributes to those citrusy notes, maybe, like lemon or orange.
Yeah, there's definitely an orange quality, this wine. So I think you're onto its secrets, okay?
Okay.
The official tasting notes describe that citrus flavor you're sensing as tangerine.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, some tangerine. So let's have another sip.
Don't mind if I do. Mm. Okay, I'm gonna level up my wine vocabulary here based on what you've imparted upon me. You know, as we're talking about the end of the finish, right? Like the finish, if you will. the end of the taste. I'm getting some minerality, right? Maybe some salinity. And it kind of seems to be a wine that would maybe very much be at home, specifically on the beach, right?
Well,
the salt in the air.
Yeah, you've already jumped ahead. I've kept the back of the bottle turned away from you on purpose, but you know a good summer beach wine when you find it, so I'm just going to ask you to please read the winemaker's label for our listeners.
Okay, don't mind if I do. All right, here we go. Let's set the scene. You've got some seagulls, seagull noises. You've got some ocean waves hitting the beach, breaking on the waves. Okay, here we go. The ocean breeze kisses your... This is me reading. The ocean breeze kisses your face. You lay back and glaze upon the glorious sunset while recalling the summer's adventures, friendships, and memories made. You breathe deeply and savor those special moments once more.
That label writer certainly captured the essence of this wine, right?
Yeah, totally.
It is truly a beach wine. It is truly summer in a bottle,
mm-hmm.
right? But I'm going to say that while it's okay to create a great label, and it's okay to come up with a cute name like mm-hmm. Summer in a Bottle, it really takes a skilled winery like this label's Woffler Estates to bring a wine like this to market. It's a blend of 65.5% Grenache, 20.5% Cinsault, 12.5% Vermentino, and a 1.5% splash of Syrah. I mean, that's a really complicated blend, but it's a complex wine that is made to seem simple.
Yeah, I mean, and it definitely gives this easy sipping feeling to it. I mean, last season we talked about how rosés really have emerged as more complex wines than what meets the eye or maybe what their reputation used to have. It's another example that proves that point. You know, sort of discerning wine drinkers can certainly find elegant rosés that are a far cry from the old blush wines you read about from the 90s, and this is a great example of that.
Well, Charlotte, yes, at your age, you've read about the history of rosé and those blush wines from the 90s.
Fair.
I actually drank some of those 90s pink wines and some not so good, you know, white Zinfandel. That comes to mind. But I don't want to go back to those wine styles at all. Not when we can drink the rosés that we featured on Wines We Drink.
Right? Well, and I'm glad to have missed it then, I guess. Yeah. I understand. This is a good rosé. But can you share with our listeners how it rates in the marketplace, how it compares to others?
Yeah, the Vivino app gives this 2022 vintage 4.2 stars out of 5 and ranks it among the top 1% of all wines in the world.
Wow, a top 1% rosé? I mean, this is certainly a keeper from my perspective in terms of quality, but can I afford it?
Absolutely, yes. The good news about this wine is it has a national average price of about $25, which the Vivino app rates as, quote, great value for the money, end quote, stating that similar wines usually cost 53% more.
Wow, okay, then there you go. An elegant, affordable summer sipping wine for the beach or the back deck. Yeah, I would agree. This is summer in a bottle, and it's a real find.
Yes, and this rosé selection is very versatile when it comes to pairing. You know, we've talked about this being a summer patio wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe just there drinking it by yourself or with a significant other. But if you're thinking about having a party, you know, or serving this with a meal, you could think a rich fish like a salmon would go really well with this wine. It would also work to tame some spicy Thai food, right? And if you're simply offering up a cheese pairing, I would suggest serving this with Havarti. Charlotte, I've sliced a little Havarti, so give that a try with a sip of this wine.
Oh man, we do get to eat this season. All right, here we go. Oh wow. The texture and the flavor of the Havarti works so well with the acidity, and the salt in the cheese is just exploding with that sip of the wine.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Havarti is often described as this buttery and smooth cheese, and it's just sweet enough, though, you know, to complement a dry but fruit-forward rosé like Summer in a Bottle.
Mm-hmm. Well, Keith and I are going to finish our cheese, and we're going to take a short break while we sip some more, nibble some more. We'll be back with this season's new feature, which we will call The Finish. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, welcome back, everyone. You've joined us for our second episode in the third season of our Summer Fun Wine Project. We are now in the portion of the show that we are calling The Finish.
Well, you know, Charlotte, we don't want our show to become stale, and this is the third season after all. So this year, I had an idea to come up with a new way of ending each episode. You know, just like you want a great wine to linger on the palate long after you swallow, right? We want to end each of the episodes with a feature, right? Something to stay with you.
Mm-hmm.
So as Charlotte said, we're calling it The Finish. Some weeks we'll have some guests, like our first episode, we featured Todd Hurt, and Todd's going to be joining us again next week to end episode
awesome.
3. Some weeks we're going to talk about wine styles, and some weeks I'll provide some deeper background on the wine we featured, and that's what we're going to do today.
Okay, great. So where do you want to take us then with your background story?
Well, as we're talking about today's rosé, I left out some really pertinent details. For example, would you believe that this 2022 vintage is only this wine label's second release of a French rosé?
Whoa, okay, only the second. I mean, that's so hard to believe. Immediate success.
Well, not really.
Okay.
Okay, right? That's where there's a little mystery here, right?
Okay.
Okay, so I guess that we just have to say that that's somewhat intentionally misleading, okay?
Okay.
Let me explain, right?
All right, a little wine mystery unraveling ahead
okay.
of us.
Right. Okay, well, this is only the second release of its Summer in a Bottle from France. This winemaker, Wolfler Estate, has been making rosé wine for years on Long Island in the state of New York.
Okay.
In fact, a New York Times article about the winery said that not only has Wolfler ridden the rosé renaissance over the past 15 years, It helped create it and drive it.
Okay, wow. Okay, then, yeah, I take all of that back. The New York winery has a lot to do with our newfound love of this French pink wine.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, but pink wine in general.
Okay.
You know, not just that from France. They were making rosé wines, you know, from grapes from their Long Island vineyards before they got into this venture. So the winery's location is in the Hamptons.
Lovely.
And its penchant for turning out quality product attracted that area's upscale clientele. And you have to just say it's been a marketing marriage. I'm going to go back to that New York Times article and quote it again. The same article said, quote, "The winery has become a scene for its luxury SUV-owning patrons and the many visitors that flock to the beach all summer." And then it continues, quote, "Gaggles of clean-cut couples and incognito celebrities turn out in pastel shorts and floral print sundresses to lounge on the grass behind the Wolfler wine stand on the south side of the property, sipping rosé while their children frolic to live music," end quote. Now that paints a picture, doesn't it?
Certainly it does. I mean, it really seems like the Wolfler estate was a part of the movement that's made rosé wine cool.
Yeah, they really knew what they were doing when they were able to get this upscale clientele to buy into the concept of pink wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more than a decade ago.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's really worked out well as a business proposition, right? Wolfler has gone from selling about 1,500 cases of Summer in a Bottle in 2014 to more than 105,000 cases last year.
Wow.
And by the way, that case volume includes about 35,000 cases of this wine that was imported from France that we're drinking today.
Wow. Okay. Well, then that's my next question. How does a New York winery expand like that into a French label like this?
Well, I think it really started with Wolfler's reputation. You know, the label had achieved a well-known rosé, right? They had established some credibility in the U.S. market. I mean, the consumers liked what they were doing. The wine critics liked what they were doing. And that credibility made it easier to find a French partner. The winery CEO said they visited Provence several times. They searched for more than 2 years to find the right partner. And they eventually found and decided on working with Guillaume de Chevron Villette, who is described as an 11th generation winemaker. 11 generations of winemaking history went into this bottle.
Okay, right. Wow. That is fascinating. And really interesting that a New York winery could ultimately have such an influence on the wine market and then end up working with a French winemaker who has so much family history behind him.
You're right. It's stories like these that I find so interesting about the wine world and that I find interesting about, you know, finding a wine I like and then researching the story behind that bottle. You know, wine is ultimately a business, but it is a business that requires passionate people to create the truly exceptional wines we drink. And Wolfler Estate has to be recognized as one of the industry's major influencers. I'm going to go back to the New York Times again, right? They quoted Joey Wolfler, one of the winery's owners, in that article. And I think she captured the essence of today's episode when she said, quote, "Rosé has become a lifestyle," end quote.
Wow, yeah, that really encapsulates all of what you just said in terms of rosé taking on an identity, you know? And I think that certainly puts a bow on today's wine selection. And just like that, we have it. That's the finish for today's episode. So, Keith, what can you tell us about the wine we'll be drinking next week?
Well, Charlotte, we're going to be back in Italy for a Pinot Grigio. But like today's episode had a little twist, so will next week's selection. Just a little twist. Let's just say it's not your typical Pinot Grigio.
Okay. Maybe that in a former self that would have freaked me out, but now I'm super excited. Another wine mystery to unfold, right? Okay. So I guess until next week, everyone.
Yes, thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Wines We Drink. Listen to our other episodes anywhere you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on Twitter @WinesWeDrink and on Instagram @TheWinesWeDrink. Cheers.